58-32, Jayhawks. Here's Moss, a lob to Doak, and a two-hand rim rock and jam. Moss on the lob, and Doak on the slam. They'll dribble off the final 10 seconds, and you can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win 13 in a row for number one Kansas.
He's playing. He's on a roll. He's dominating Pate. Just in the few possessions that he's out of the game, you know, David's making every shot, and we're scoring on that end. But his presence defensively, nothing against anybody else. We're just a different team, and the way he rebounded the ball and you know, made his free throws today. That hopefully will be a springboard to more of that.
Udoka Azubuike continues to play well. His 13th double-double of the year, 1,000 career points at Kansas, and consider he's had quite a few injuries over that time. 19 points, 16 rebounds, 8 offensive rebounds in just 24 minutes, and he got to see his older brother for the first time in 10 years. Can you imagine not seeing your brother for 10 years? Or your mom or your dad or whatever the case may be? That's pretty crazy. Udoka Azubuike, a big game last night, and I thought KU'd be tested. I really did. They proved they're the number one team in the country last night, in my eyes. I mean, to come back after an emotional win over Baylor and take care of business like they did last night against a team that's been playing a lot better in Oklahoma State, I think that says a lot about KU. And I was very, very impressed and glad to say I was wrong, because I had KU winning, but I thought that would be a tight game. Mm-hmm. I really did. I thought, you know, maybe KU pull away, win by 10, but I thought that would be a bit of a struggle, and it was maybe a struggle for the first 10 minutes, but after that, KU absolutely dominated and controlled things. But it starts with a big guy inside, and if he can stay healthy, which I'm just holding my breath every time he hits the deck, because if he goes out, KU is a completely different team. We saw this last year. Yeah. People forget KU was number one in the nation when he got hurt last year. They were number one and undefeated when he got hurt last year. And then all of a sudden they became still a good team, but not a great team.
Yeah.
And when you got Dotson, Garrett, and Udoka healthy, and they don't have a deep bench, we know that. But now Moss is hitting shots, and Obagi played well last night. And they all get the playing about as well as they can in regards to shooting the ball from the outside, and you have Doka inside. Last night, Oklahoma State, they just put three guys around Udoka as soon as he caught it. So he kicked it out. KU took threes, and they were missing early on. And I think that's the way you almost have to play KU. But then they started making them. And once they start making them, now what are you going to do? That's the thing. If KU, Haney said it before, the voice of Jayhawks with us every Thursday. He said, if KU makes threes, I don't know if this team's going to be beaten. And I would agree with that. As long as Udoka's healthy, they still got him inside. They're making threes. That opens up everything for him. And then you go inside and gets doubled. He's done a much better job of kicking it out. And now if you cut off those double teams and then you slide to open spot, like Isaiah Moss, who's shooting the ball really well right now, that makes this team really, really, really dangerous. Yeah. And they're so good defensively that I thought Fran Franchella made a good point last night, that Baylor and Kansas are so good defensively, he said, I think they can overcome a bad performance offensively in the tournament, even an Elite Eight game. Their defense is good enough to where they could maybe grind one out and win when they don't play that great. Whereas a lot of years, you have an off night on offense, you're just not going to win. But those two teams are so good defensively that they might be able to withstand that come tournament time. And I thought that was an excellent point. I think Fran Franchella is one of the best in the business, by the way. Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
He knows his stuff.
I've always felt that ever since, you know, I started listening to him, and he was always pumping up the Jayhawk Conference, which I went to school at Colby.
Right, sure.
And ever since I heard him doing all that, and you know, he kind of listened. He knows Europe. He knows JUCO. He knows everything about it.
Yeah, he does.
And that's what makes him good. He's very knowledgeable about. He's not Jay Billis. No. We'll just say that.
No. Jay Billis is a smart guy too, but Fran knows the whole package.
Yeah.
He has the whole package, international package, everything else. All right, K-State and back in action. We'll talk about that coming up in a moment. Local sports, we had some high school basketball last night. But before we get to that, let's put a little bow on something we talked about yesterday. And that's the Osborne boys setting a state record. And we got the box score of this game that Osborne scored 100 points in, 100-25 over Chase. And here are the numbers, a little bit more information. Osborne beat Chase boys the other night, 100-25. I'm sure there was running clock in the fourth quarter. And I've heard some people say, well, what can we do now to, because this isn't just a one-time thing. I mean, you've got Central Plains girls rocking people by 70. You've got Lakeside boys beat Chase by 50.
Chase lost 77-22
last night. So lost by 55 last night. How do you bring it into, how can you make it a little bit not so bad, I guess is the way you're looking at it. And I would say one thing you could do, and you do this in football, in 11-man football, because an 8-man, it's a 45-point rule at halftime, game over. But in 11 man, if the teams agree to it before the game, because you know if it's going to be pretty one-sided beforehand, at least the obvious ones, is that you have a running clock in the fourth quarter. Make it a running clock at halftime. Just get the two administrators, the principals, the ADs, whoever you got to get together and say, listen, it's 50-0 at halftime. We're not going to win this game. Let's go ahead and go running clock in the third and fourth quarters. And if you do that in basketball, I think that obviously prevents somebody from scoring 100, which I don't have a problem with somebody scoring 100 personally. I don't. Mm-hmm. Now, how they go about 100, that could be a whole different story. But if you did that, you had a running clock the whole second half, you somebody still may score 100, by the way. That can still happen. But you would have less possessions. You'd have less shots, which means less chance to score as many points. And it still is going to be a one-sided affair, whether you have running clock the whole second half or not. But I think that's something that schools need to agree upon. Say, listen, and I don't know if Keisha allows that to happen. They do in football. I know it's happened before. But, you know, hey, come on. Let's common sense. Let it prevail here. We've only got 8 kids out for boys basketball, whatever the case may be. And we got 2 that are hurt. And we're down 50 at halftime. Let's just do a running clock second half, call it good. Or, you know what, let's just call it good. Game over at half, if you really want to go that far. I mean, seriously. I mean, if they can both agree to it, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? But have you ever run a clock fourth quarter? Why can't you just go ahead and have it the whole second half?
I felt like that sometimes when I'm calling games. It's like, can we just start that clock right now?
Yeah.
And like when I'm in the third quarter and it's like,
right.
Oh, man, this is... So you just know how the game is.
But here's some crazy stats from that game on Friday night. Osborne shot the ball 90 times. The Osborne boys against Chase, 78 were from 3.
Yeah.
They were 8. Listen to this. This is normally what you do. Normally, 28 of 78 and 8 out of 12. Normally, 28 of 78 is from 2 and 8 of 12 is from 3. No. Osborne was 28 of 78 from 3, and they're 8 of 12 from 2. Here's the other crazy stat of this ball game against Chase on Friday night, to put a bow on it. There were a total of 6 fouls called the entire game.
Yeah.
Osborne didn't attempt a free throw, and I'm guessing Chase didn't either. What did the refs even get paid? Should they even get paid? I mean, what do they do, blow the whistle on the jump ball or something? I mean, what, blow the whistle for a timeout? I mean, no wonder that game got over so early and I got texted a final. No fouls called.
Yeah.
And a running clock probably in the fourth quarter, and the girls' game was one-sided as well.
Yeah, so girls definitely had a running clock.
That
too.
Was the shortest night for Osborne basketball in a while.
Oh,
probably.
Without a doubt.
So state record, 28 threes made, blew away the record of 22. And, you know, if you agree or disagree with shooting that many threes, that's your opinion. You're entitled to it one way or the other. But it is pretty crazy that in that game, not a single there no free throws attempted for Osborne. I'm pretty sure Chase didn't either. There were a total of 6 fouls called, 3 on both teams, I believe. And Osborne shot 78 threes and made 28, which is a state record. They only had 8 two-point field goals and no free throws. 84 of their 100 points came from 3. That's a box score you don't see every day.
No.
In fact, never.
Yeah, never.
In state history,
yeah,
never.
Never in boys' state history in this state anyway.
No. So put a bow on that one. All right, high school basketball from last night. Dusty, did we go over that already?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
No.
Okay, let's go ahead.
So Osborne knows who they're going to be playing next, as it'll be Logan. Logan beat Rock Hills last night in the first round of the 1A regional there, right here on Katy Country 94 up in Mankato, 66-43. Logan kind of jumped out on them early and then had a big second quarter to get a 19-point lead to go on to win it by 23. Logan's now 13-8. They were led by Dylan Van Lays with 20 and Ty Katz with 15. Rock Hills got 19 from Noah Williams and 12 from Jared Gillett. Rock Hills finishes their season at 12-7 with that loss there last night. So Noah Williams, as well as Keegan Wagner and Riley Welch, all 3 seniors, saw their seasons come to, or careers, I should say, come to a close last night there in Mankato. So again, Logan will move on to play Osborne coming up on Friday night. Northern Valley beat Thunder Ridge 69-54. In the other semifinal that was in that Rock Hills regional last night in Almena, Thunder Ridge finished season 7-13. Dylan Weiss had 20, Dalton Weiss had 10. For Thunder Ridge in that loss. So Thunder Ridge will await the winner of tonight's game Northern Valley will await the winner of tonight's game between Stockton and Lakeside, which will be on Z96.3. We'll tell you about that here momentarily. Other scores from last night at the Lincoln Regional. Lynn beats Lincoln 47-29 as Lincoln's season comes to a close. Clifton Clyde over Tescott 85-21. Also Pike Valley beating Southern Cloud 58-38 last night. So Lynn will move on to play St. John's Tipton 7:30 on Thursday, and Lincoln in the semifinals on the board boys' side. And Pike Valley and Clifton Clyde will meet at 6 o'clock on Thursday on the boys' side there at the Lincoln Regional. Also at the Central Plains Regional, Sylvan Lucas winning over Victoria 51-36. And Natoma beat Otis Bison 53-43. Sylvan Lucas and Natoma will play in the semis in Claflin on Thursday at 6 o'clock. So that's a look at the games from our area last night as far as those were concerned. Now we have high school basketball coming up tonight on Katy Country 94. It's a regular season contest, Beloit at Smith Center, also online at katycountry94.com, an online video stream with the Beloit Trojan channel at nckssports.com. Pre-game coverage around 5:50 and tip around 6 o'clock for Beloit at Smith Center girls, and then the boys' game will follow. And then we have that doubleheader 1A regional, Stockton at Lakeside from the Rock Hills Regional, as both the boys and girls are playing tonight in Downs. Stockton Lakeside girls game will tip at 6 o'clock. We all pregame coverage 5:50 on Z96.3 through the lake and katycountry94.com coming up here this evening. Also in that regional, Osborne hosting Northern Valley, Rock Hills at Logan. Both of those games are at 7 o'clock. All the other games at 7 o'clock at the Lincoln Regional. Lincoln's at Tescott, Pike Valley at Clifton Clyde, Southern Cloud hosting Lynn and girls action tonight. And the Sylvan Lucas girls are hosting La Crosse in the first round of the Central Plains 1A Regional. So all those schedules, all the brackets, everything you need to know about postseason basketball is posted at nckssports.com.
All right, your thoughts on Lakeside Stockton girls and boys doubleheader tonight?
Lakeside obviously is the higher seed in both, but again, like we told you when Hill City played St. John's Tipton,
don't
look at seeds, don't look at records, don't look at anything, because the Stockton's playing in the Mid-Continent League, which is definitely a tougher league, and they've been challenged this year. On the girls' side, I honestly would probably give the edge to Stockton. On the boys' side, I think it could go 50-50. Just looking at the numbers, and I don't have all of Stockton's numbers in my head right now, but, if Lakeside comes out and shoots well, like they have at times on the boys' side this year, I think they have a good chance to win and move on to play Northern Valley on Thursday. But again, it can't be like Rock Hills last night where they didn't shoot very well. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to shoot. You got to be able to do some good things. Stockton will have just a little bit of size, so we'll see how it goes. But the Stockton girls don't have a lot of numbers, but they do have some talent on their team, and it'll be tough for Stockton. Wanted Osborne this year, and Lakeside did too, I guess. But we'll see. This could be an evenly matched game on the girls' side too, but just kind of the way things have gone here at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. It's a small edge for me to Stockton, I think, but it'll be a great game, I think, if both teams execute.
Should be two competitive games over in Downs tonight. Yes. And the season on the line for all four of those teams. Stockton at Lakeside tonight, 1A regional play, starting about 5:50 a pregame on Z96.3 Lake. On Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com, live video stream nckssports.com. Via the Beloit Trojan channel, the Beloit Trojan girls and boys go up to Smith Center, take on the Redmen and Lady Red. We'll start on the boys' side of things, because the boys' side, Smith Center boys, looks like they're going to be on the road at Ellis in the first round of sub-state play next week. They're going to be, appears to be a 7 seed, it appear right now, and that doesn't look like that's going to change. And talking to Coach Buckmaster yesterday, he said, we're pretty sure we're going to go down the road and play Ellis in the first round. The one thing that's in the balance tonight, and really the only thing that's in the balance tonight, is that the Beloit boys can get the number one seed for their sub-state with a win tonight at Smith Center. And Coach Ryan Eilert, his team has battled to get to this point.
Getting that, at least a share of the league title, and midway through the season, you didn't think that was a chance. Our kids have really battled over the last 7 or 8 games and made huge improvements and able to win it. And, they should be proud of that. It's a back-to-back. But now we need to refocus on for Tuesday, because it is for the number one seed and positioning ourselves for sub-state.
Yeah, Beloit went in the league for the second straight year. They get at least a share of the league title. And if Sacred Heart loses tonight, they would get the league title outright. And if they win tonight, the Beloit boys, they are the number one seed, and they would take on Russell, a team they beat by 56 recently.
Yes.
And could have scored about 140 in that game. So we might need to work on the running clock the whole second half of that one. And that one would be in Beloit. And that might be the last time Beloit plays Russell in boys basketball for quite some time, as Russell is going to the Mid-Continent League. The girls' game, not really anything on the line per se. Smith Center girls are going to be at home as a 4 seed. Looks like they'll be hosting Republic County. The Beloit girls are locked in as a number 2 seed. They're going to take on either Minneapolis or Hoisington. Those two teams are both 5-14. So the Beloit girls know they're going to be a 2 seed. They're going to be at home in the first round of sub-state. Smith Center knows they're going to be a 4 seed. They're going to be at home first round of sub-state. But still, you want to play well, and you want to feel good about yourself going into sub-state play. It's the last game of the week for both these teams before sub-state next week. And Sean Arim is head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans, the outright league champions. Getting ready for Smith Center, preparing for Substate.
I don't know how it's all going to play out, so we'll just get ready for whoever comes, but one game at a time, and so we'll go see what Smith Center. I know they're a very talented team as well, but we've set ourselves up where we want to be, and so we'll just go have fun, and then we'll get prepared for Substate.
Girls game, Smith Center, they really struggle shooting free throws, 48% on the year, and they've had problems with turnovers. They had 30 at Trigo the other day and still only lost by 14 because they out-rebounded Trigo by 14, so that helped equalize some of the turnovers. But we're 2 or 12 from the foul line. So Smith Center's got clearly some flaws, and they clearly got strengths. I mean, that's as clear as you can get right there in one game in particular.
Yeah, they definitely have height, so they can definitely rebound.
Talon Rentschler's a really good player, and Bree Freeling as well. So that'll be an interesting matchup tonight. The last time the boys went to Smith Center, they lost.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago. That. It was double overtime, 77-73. It was a great game.
I was listening to that on the way back from my game because it was late.
So, but prior to that, Belated won, I think, 8 or 9 in a row against Smith Center. But Smith Center, last time in Smith Center, did win. So that'll be interesting to follow tonight. Smith Center trying to pull off a big upset on the boys' side. Girls' game should be very competitive as well. Okay, KU, we talked about showing why they're number one. 83-58 victory last night at Oklahoma State. Big 12 action from last night that you might have missed. West Virginia is just falling apart. They're now 7-8 in conference play, 19-9, and they're working themselves towards the bubble. West Virginia losing at Texas, 67-57. Texas now trying to work their way into the NCAA tournament, and they're right there, 7-8. Right there, West Virginia in standings, believe it or not. And they are 17-11 overall, trying to save Shaka Smart's job, apparently. Tonight,
I guess that's what's going on.
I guess. I don't know.
I figured it was done for him, but, you know, they come back and make the tournament, I think.
I guess.
I don't know.
Kicking in at the right time.
Yeah.
Tonight, TCU is at Iowa State at 6 o'clock. K-State's at number 2 Baylor at 7 tonight on ESPN+. Plus. Let the complaining begin about where the game's at. And then number 22 Texas Tech is at Oklahoma at 8 o'clock tonight on ESPN2. Well, so many times over the years, or at least it feels like it, especially the K-State fans, that K-State has helped KU win conference championships, knocking off a team, pulling off an upset. Well, here you are. K-State wins at Baylor. Which I don't think anybody's picking them to win, but if they did win at Baylor, KU would be a game up with only a few games to play in conference. And Bruce Weber talks about the Bears, who are probably a little bit salty after losing to KU and having their 23-game winning streak snapped over the weekend.
Obviously a big one Tuesday with Baylor, who lost to Kansas, so they're tied. You know, that it, we're catching them at a bad time, but we're in our bad time too, so we got to step up.
Yeah, the bad time, too. What, 7-8? I'm losing track of their losing streak. Is it 7 now?
Yeah,
it is 7.
Yeah.
K-State 2-12, 9-18 overall against Baylor, 24-2, 13-1. Baylor needs a win to keep pace with KU. And after today's game for Baylor, you only have 3 conference games left for both those teams. And if they both win out, they'll have to put 2 logos, coins, or whatever, into a hat to determine who gets number one seed or bid to determine it. And the first name they draw out, first logo, will be the 2 seed, and the last one in the hat would be the 1 seed. Huh. That's how they determine it.
Yeah. Well,
because,
yeah, I mean,
because think
there's
about
no
it.
Other head-to-head.
Right,
you
know, exactly.
You can't say, well, you lost to this team, but we didn't.
You can't.
There's only one loss.
It's pretty simple.
Both went out.
It's very simple. Yeah. They brought it up last night on ESPN right away. I'm like, well, duh. I mean, they beat each other, and that's it. And then they've beaten everybody else. So there's no way there can be a discrepancy tie-wise.
Percentages against this team or that team or whatever. It's
if they both finish 17-1, they mean that they went 2-0 against everybody in the conference and split with one another. They're both 17-1. You want to go point differential? Baylor beat KU by 12, but they don't do that. And Baylor lost to KU by 3. So that's how they do it. That's what they explained last night.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean,
yeah,
not a flip of the coin. They put them in a hat. I don't know if it's a lucky leprechaun hat or what kind of hat they put on.
I think it'd probably be the same odds, wouldn't it?
Yeah, why not just flip the coin? I guess you don't have to. Nobody,
50-50 both ways, isn't it?
Who's going to call the coin toss? Well, let's flip for it. And then let's flip again for the actual toss. You know, my son's done that at 6 years old. He's like, oh, Dad, who's going to call the toss? Let's flip to see who calls the toss. I'm like, okay, so now we're flipping to call the toss, and we do the toss again. It's kind of funny. So K-State at Baylor tonight, chances of winning for K-State are 1 to 100. I'll say 5%. You?
Max.
Max 5%.
Baylor's not happy right now, I wouldn't think, I'm not looking real forward to that one.
No, most K-State fans
aren't. I'm going to put it at 2.
2, okay. Let the record show that I'm more optimistic than K-State boy.
Just because I put something on there.
There you go. Alex, are you listening? I said 5%. Dusty said 2%. There was one time we did that, And there were similar numbers we gave, and K-State won. I think it was Mavic K-State against Oklahoma football. I don't think we had it that low, but
no, it wasn't that low.
But
it
was
low. That's what it was, though.
Yeah.
I think it was like maybe.
And Alex gave me grief about that. I said, "Listen, the K-State guy had a lower percentage than I did, for crying out loud."
Yeah.
So get off my back.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny. So Alex, if you're listening, that one's for you. So then he can shove it in my face, and K-State pulls off the upset against Baylor tonight,
and
that's fine. I'm sure you're cool with it. Absolutely.
I've eaten crow many times in my life.
It tastes like chicken. Okay. Remembering Kobe Bryant. This was really the memorial they did for Kobe at Staples Center was really well done. And it's still hard to believe that Kobe is no longer with us. And yesterday there were various people that spoke. Shaq's line was great. I thought that was hilarious because that's how Kobe was. He was so smart intellectually. He can come right back at you. And then Shaq says, yeah, he ain't passing the ball. But that was pretty funny. But I don't want to play it because there's an expletive.
Yes.
But Michael Jordan, who many consider the greatest of all time, he was at the memorial yesterday. And here's Michael Jordan talking about the passing of Kobe Bryant.
When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died. Or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing that little brother that I tried to help in every way I could. Please, rest in peace, little brother.
That was Michael Jordan, Gina Auriemma, Deanna Taurasi, among others. Shaquille spoke. Many people spoke at the memorial yesterday. And we can't play all the audio from it, but this one gives you goosebumps. This is GM President Rob Pelinka of the Lakers. He one of Kobe's closest friends. Here's Rob Pelinka talking about the last time he communicated with Kobe. Listen very carefully.
I was in Sunday church with my family. My phone was deep in the pocket of my jeans when I felt the familiar text buzz. For a second, I ignored the notification because I was in church. But for some reason, with this text, I felt a sudden urge to check my phone. I slipped it out of my jeans and discovered the text was from Kobe. There was nothing uncharacteristic or unfamiliar about this. For the last two decades, Kobe and I talked or texted every single day because that's what best friends do. In that moment, my instincts were to put the phone down and get back to the preacher's sermon, but a gentle, otherworldly nudge compelled me to open the text, so I did. I quickly saw that Kobe was asking me if I happened to know a certain baseball agent based in Southern California. Since Kobe's question didn't have any urgency to do it, I decided I'd wait until after church to respond, but then again, there was a gentle nudge. I grabbed my phone and texted Kobe back that I had seen the baseball agent at a Lakers game just the other night and was happy to help him with whatever he wanted. It was now just past 9:30. Kobe texts back explaining his desire to help a friend of his secure a baseball agency internship for one of his young daughters. Kobe vouched for the girl's character, intellect, and work ethic. He clearly wanted to champion a bright future for her. I text Kobe right back and said I would put a plan in motion to help him get that done. A handful of minutes later, Kobe and Gianna and seven other beautiful souls ascended into heaven. Kobe had been texting me from the helicopter. The girl in that text chain that he was wanting to help so badly was Lexi Altobelli, the surviving daughter of Coach John Altobelli, who was also on the helicopters. Kobe's last human act was heroic. He wanted to use his platform to bless and shape a young girl's future.
How about that?
Hasn't Kobe done that for all of us?
How about that? I mean, that's just... You know, I can't imagine what Rob Pelinka is going through, you know, after basically had the last conversation with Kobe, and Kobe was trying to do something good for somebody who actually was the daughter of another person, another coach, baseball coach that was on the helicopter that perished.
Yeah.
That just gives you goosebumps, no doubt about it. Vanessa Bryant did a wonderful job with the eulogy that she presented about 10 minutes yesterday. And here's towards the end, here's Kobe Bryant's wife about the passing of her husband and her daughter Gigi.
Everyone naturally gravitated towards them. They were funny, happy, silly, and they loved life. They were so full of joy and adventure. God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other. He had to bring them home to heaven together. Babe, you take care of our Gigi. And I got Nani, Bibi, and Coco. We're still the best team. We love and miss you, Boo-Boo and Gigi. May you both rest in peace and have fun in heaven until we meet again one day. We love you both and miss you forever and always. Mommy.
And that's Kobe Bryant's wife, Vanessa. I can't imagine, you know, losing not only her husband, but losing her 13-year-old daughter. All, I think sometimes we all overlook that. We're so caught up in Kobe that we got to remember Gigi, too. And so Sabrina Ionescu is an outstanding basketball player on the women's side of things. She spoke at Staples Center yesterday. She was good friends with Kobe. Kobe really helped her development as a player. He was a big supporter of hers. And last night, she made history on the day, February 24th, Kobe's number, 24. And after she had spoken at the memorial, she then was able to make it to Oregon in time for the game, number 3 Oregon versus number 4 Stanford.
For Sabrina Ionescu, puts together a triple-double performance and becomes the first player in Division I history with 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 1,000 assists.
That's men or women. That's the first player, not first female, the first player in Division I history to do what she just did.
Yes.
Last night. And she's still got plenty more games to play. Yeah. Pretty impressive. She's got, what, 26 now career triple-doubles at the college level? That's pretty impressive as well.
I wouldn't want to be playing Oregon come tournament time.
I wouldn't either.
I was going to say that.
I wouldn't either. We should also point out that Vanessa Bryant's attorneys have filed a wrongful death suit against Island Express Helicopters and Island Express Holding Corporation, the company that operated the helicopter, per multiple reports. Vanessa Bryant alleges in the suit that the pilot failed to abort the flight, even though he knew of cloudy conditions. The suit also says Zoe Bayan, who was the pilot who died, flew the helicopter into conditions in which he couldn't viably navigate using visual references, forcing him to use instrument flight rules, and failed to avoid or keep a safe distance between the aircraft and obstacles in the flight path. So Bobbin was one of the most experienced pilots with 8,000 hours of flying time with the company, but he had been reprimanded in 2015 for flying in airspace with poor visibility without permission. There's a little bit of a history there. I find this tough to deal with. Imagine what they're dealing with, obviously. But if I'm the pilot's family, this is very tough.
Sure.
Because we don't know what happened on that helicopter. I was talking to my dad. He was back last night for my youngest's kindergarten program. And you don't know what happened on that plane or that helicopter. But here's something to throw out there, all right? And I know it's speculation, and we have no idea. And I don't know if Vanessa Bryant has thought about this or not. And I know she's probably got a lot of people tugging at her each way. You know, you need to file a lawsuit against the helicopter company, your husband, and you're robbed of your husband and daughter for many years because they made a poor decision, or the pilot did. The pilot was a human being, too. He made a mistake, obviously, a critical one. But here's the thing. We don't know what happened. We don't know what happened from the standpoint of the pilot very well could have advised Kobe and everybody on that helicopter, we shouldn't be flying. And Kobe maybe somebody else on the plane, who knows? But Kobe, I'm sure, is the one that was paying the bill because that was his helicopter and helicopter pilot. And that guy also flew Kawhi Leonard, too. Who's to say, and we don't know, that Kobe, they were running late or they were running on time, but they wanted to get to that basketball tournament for Gigi. It was the Mamba Academy tournament. It was Kobe's tournament. And they didn't probably want to be late. Maybe Kobe said, hey, I know it's foggy, but we need to get there. You know, or maybe the pilot told Kobe, no, dude, I don't think we should. But if Kobe's paying the bill and he's Kobe's the client and you're the guy being employed by Kobe and you're the helicopter pilot and you feel like you can do it, even though you probably know in your best thought it's risky, But if your person that's paying you to do the job insists that you go fly that helicopter to a tournament and you're allowed to go up in the helicopter, you know, we don't know if that's what happened.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, sometimes we don't know all the story, and we never will on that because everybody perished on the helicopter. But who's to say Kobe or somebody else really pushed to say, listen, we got to get there. And we do this in life, don't we? I mean, we're always in a hurry. I got to get there. Hurry up. We're going to be late. Well, you know what? Late's better than being there dead, right? It's okay to be late sometimes. And now, you don't want to be late and lose your job. I get all that. You want to be on time for an interview. But is an interview worth, you know, driving 85 miles an hour on interstate, putting yourself in jeopardy of being killed? You know, we get kind of caught up in that. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened because I don't know. But I do feel that it's got to be really tough. We talk about how tough it is on the Bryant family, but all the people that lost those loved ones on the helicopter. But imagine being the family of the pilot who died and now being basically said that he's the one that caused all this, when we really truly don't know that. It could have been Kobe himself that just said, dude, I'm paying you to ride this helicopter. We want to get there, and you can do it. You've done it before. Go for it. Or they might have taken a vote and said, you want to go? Yeah, let's go. We don't know. Or the pilot might have said, everything's great. The pilot might have said, you know what? This is nothing. I've flown in this before. No problem. Maybe Kobe said, you sure we should be flying? And the pilot said, know what? Dude, I got it. I've done it 1,000 times. Piece of cake. We have no idea the conversation. But I'm just throwing that out there for some people to consider. Because I just think it's, I mean, I know that there's so much loss and so much, you know, pain when you lose loved ones. And we're all humans. We make mistakes, and in some cases, obviously, critical mistakes. And whether the pilot is the one that made the mistake or was kind of pushed into the mistake, we will never know. But I do feel like it's unfortunate that that family now has got a... They already lost their father, their husband, or whatever. I don't know his extended family, the pilot. He's dead. He can't answer questions.
Yeah.
So now you're suing the company, which maybe the company... Are they liable? I guess so. But the pilot may have done his own thing, and how they can control the pilot, he was reprimanded for doing that before, so there is a little bit of a history. But I think we get caught up in thinking about Kobe Bryant's family, which is fine. But what about all the other people that died on that helicopter, including the pilot?
Yeah.
That's why I hate to see this, personally. I hate to
see it. Yeah, I don't like
seeing
it.
I mean, financially, the Bryant should be fine.
I was pretty confident it was coming, but I don't like to see it either.
I'm not saying it's wrong what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's unfortunate.
It is, for sure.
It really is. So, anyway, one thing's for sure. A lawsuit's not going to bring anybody back.
No.
9:42 is our time. Riley Gates is on the way. By the way, Bradley Beal last night, oddly enough, on February 24th, yesterday, he scored 55 points. The Wizards lost to the Bucks 137-134. Why do I bring this up? It was Bradley Beal's second straight game with 50 points or more. The last NBA player to score 50 or more on back-to-back nights was?
Kobe.
Kobe Bryant.